Greetings to all of God's people. This is Mordecai Joseph. We're now in lesson 317, and we're going to continue in Leviticus 27 and verse 17. Last time we're talking about one of the things that people dedicate to God, and that's a house, and the law of God about a house, which obviously the religions of this world that call themselves by the name of God or Christ or whatever it may be, they don't pay much attention to, because the law is basically that if a man dedicates his home, you see, then in terms of the years of the Jubilee, it would be determined when he gets it back. In other words, a dedication like that, God did not want to keep to himself, but he says, just like with the land itself. Now, we're not talking about a cow and an animal, things like that. But in terms of big things like that, like a land and a home, God wanted his people to have it back because he does not want a cycle of poverty and all the problems that come from it. And he's the owner of all those things. So he commanded, in essence, when you read that, he commanded the priesthood, as you study the law, that if somebody gives them a home to sanctify for their use, they can use it for 50 years. And if they're going to sell it, which they should not, it should be on the stipulation that they get it back, you see. But, you know, basically they should not even sell it, because, you know, even then you have problems. They should use it for 50 years or whatever years until the Jubilee, you know, 49, 2 years, depending on the year of the Jubilee. And at the end of that time, they should not say, well, that's holy, that's sanctified, that's ours, you know, and so-and-so, you know, priest and Levite lives there. And, you know, we can't get him out of things like that. He says, no, just give it back. Jubilee, that's the law. Everybody does it. No exceptions. Period. No buts. You see? Well, as long as the priest kept that, things functioned in harmony. If there were problems and people fell between the cracks in between, when the Jubilee came, that resolved everything. All the crooked paths were settled, you know, and straightened. And that was a system of God. Well, somewhere along the way, obviously, the priest, you know, stopped doing it, so it created a chain reaction there. And to this very day, you see, the ministry, you know, today we don't have the priesthood unless you're in the Catholic Church. They certainly couldn't care less about this law. And not even the people that call themselves the churches of God, you know, the people of God, congregations of God, whatever names they want to give themselves, you see, they do not obey this law, because a lot of people, you know, donate their homes, and they just sell it, or they use it, or whatever it may be, and that's it, tough luck. Who cares about Jubilee? Nobody's going to be around anyway that long. That's the way we think. And, you know, we do not consider the law of God. And God says, that's evil, that's wicked, I hate that, I loathe that, I abhor that. And if we're guilty of that, well, we've got something we can do there. But verse 18 we read, but if he sanctify his field after the Jubilee, and now it's talking about the field, he sanctify his field after the Jubilee, then the priest shall reckon unto him the money according to the years that remain unto the year of Jubilee, and an abatement shall be made from your valuation. And so that's a matter of real estate, a home or a property, a land. And if he that sanctifies the field will indeed redeem it, then he shall add the fifth part of the money, 20% of your valuation unto it, and it shall be assured to him. But in either case, he gets it back at the, you know, in the Jubilee. God does not want, you know, the priesthood to end up with the money, with a bag, and all the rest are poor people. Well, that's what they, you know, in many places you see. You go to many cities and towns all around the world where religions are. You find those glorious temples, you know, rich churches and huge edifices and buildings and things like that, and a lot of poor people all around it, you see, because these people despise the law of God. And look what happens to some of us. We gave so much to the creation of a huge edifice and property and all that. What do we have to show for it? You see? And somebody else is running with a bag with the money. You know, when the time comes, people are going to have to give account for it. Those who initiated that and those who are responsible for continuing the iniquity. Verse 19, he says, you know, he's going to pay 20% if he wants it back, and then it shall be given to him. Verse 20, and if it will not redeem the field, or if he have sold the field to another man, it shall not be redeemed anymore. You see? So if he's not willing to redeem it, and if he sells it to another man, you see, it shall not be redeemed anymore. But the field, when it goes out in the Jubilee, shall be holy unto the Lord as a field devoted. The possession thereof shall be the priests. So, in the case of people who give it to the priesthood and never have the intention of ever giving it back, which is also allowed, you see. In other words, you can determine the period of time that you're going to sanctify it. And the Jubilee, basically, you know, will be the understanding that in the Jubilee you get it back. But if you don't say that, you say, well, and I just want to give it, period. That's a different category here. Well, in that case, it remains period with the priest, or the priesthood. Of course, a lot of people don't do that. A lot of people don't give the field, you know, and the home, just, you know, unless you've got a lot, and then you don't mind, that's a different story. But, you know, again, you know, God generally did not want people to do that, because that creates a chain reaction, and it creates, you know, in other words, like throwing monkey wrenches into the economy and the society, if you do things like that. And there's never a place to rectify that. So we have to understand also that, in terms of giving for good, that is also allowed, you see. But generally speaking, people gave a land or a home or things like that, and in the Jubilee they got it back. And in verse 22, and if he sanctify unto the Lord a field which he has bought, which is not of the field of his possession, then the priest shall reckon unto him the worth of your valuation unto the year of Jubilee, and he shall give your valuation in that day as a holy thing unto the Lord. In the year of the Jubilee the field shall return unto him of whom it was bought, even to him to whom the possession of the land belongs. And that's the way God generally wanted things to be done. But there were some exceptions where people just gave it, period, you see, to the priesthood. Let's say, you know, the priesthood was multiplying, you know, they didn't have enough space in the cities that they were given by Israel, and obviously they needed more, you see, and so some people, you know, from the different tribes are willing to just give, you know, part of their land for that purpose forever, you know, perpetuity, so to speak, where they don't get it back. So, you know, there were some kind of exceptions like that too. But generally speaking, God said, I want you to get back your home, I want you to get back your land, you see, because you may not need it, but your son may need it, and your grandson may need it, you know, you may not need it. And so let's keep everything in order and properly, and that's how a society continues and an economy continues to function and prosper and do well. Instead of when we break this kind of laws, we create trends, we create problems, we create causes that are going to bring a lot of misery on the people one way or the other. And God wanted all that avoided to begin with. And so he made these laws and he gave it to them in order to be holy, in order to be able to fulfill the law, the royal law, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. This is how you do it. You see, it's not just a mushy, you know, ethereal feeling, you know, sweet, nice, nice thought. Those are tangible, real things in every aspect of our life. And so when we talk about real estate, unless it is governed by the law of God, it's going to be iniquity. And real estate is a part of religion, you see. And money is a part of religion. And banking is a part of religion. And everything, every aspect of life is a part of religion, the religion of God, which is a way. It's not a religion, the concept of men in a bunch of rituals. You know, 2 hour services, you do it in church, synagogue, mosque, whatever it may be, and forget about the rest after that. Do your own thing. You see? The way of God, the religion of God, is a way of life, is a journey that you take from the moment you are born to the moment that you die. You see? With eternal consequences. And so we must be always governed by law, and there is no such a thing as the law is done away with. And we continue to read here in verse 25, and all your valuation shall be according to the shekel of the sanctuary. 20 gerah shall be the shekel. How be it? The firstling, that is, you know, the firstborn among the beasts. In Hebrew it's Bechor, Bechorah. From that comes, you know, the feast of gathering, you know, feast of Bikurim. And all that is related, Bikurim. That means, you know, the first. And from that comes firstborn, and Bechor in Hebrew. You don't use that terminology in Hebrew, firstborn, like in English. In Hebrew, you just say Bechor, and that means first, whatever comes first. And verse 26, and birthright is also the same. It's bechorah, you see. It's not birthright, it's bechorah, that means first. The one who is born first receives the first portion of the property, of the land, of the whatever. You know, the parents are going to live to their kids, and generally the first who is born, firstborn, we call it in English, gets two portions. It's not that he gets most everything, and then all the other poor kids are getting very little. That's the law of God, and a lot of people don't understand that when it came to Joseph. They thought that Joseph got everything, and then almost everything, and all the rest of the brothers just, got a little bit, just a crumbs. It didn't work like that. God says, Joseph is going to get two parts. And you see it in the future also. And so even when the lands that he received, in terms of what we think today is the lands of Joseph, well, you don't see only Joseph living there. You see all the children of Israel living with him. They didn't get everything. You see, it never worked that way. That's contrary to the law of God. And unfortunately, many people who come to the knowledge of Joseph, of Israel, the future, or the prophecies, or the blessings that were given, they do not understand the context. But even though God gave him a lot, you see, just like in Egypt, he gave him all of Egypt, so to speak, and he was in charge of Egypt. Now, what does that mean? He ate it all? Oh, no. All of his sons, that is, all of his brothers, came and joined with him. So they all lived together. So what does it mean Joseph got it all? There's no such a thing. You see? How many steaks can you eat? And that's the way it works. So let's see now. Let's understand in terms of prophecy in the United States and British Commonwealth and things like that from that point of view. Also, if we don't, then, we invent our own teachings and doctrines and we are bearing false witness. If you go and tell the world, the same things without proper understanding of it. Verse 26, howbeit, the firstling among the beasts which is born as a firstling, that is, to the Lord, no man shall sanctify it, whether it be ox or sheep, it is the Lord's. You see, he cannot get it back. And if it be an unclean beast, then he shall ransom it according to your valuation, and shall add unto it the fifth part thereof. Or if it be not redeemed, then it shall be sold according to your valuation. Notwithstanding, no devoted thing that a man may devote unto the Lord of all that he has, whether of man or of beast, or of the field of his possession, shall be sold or redeemed. Every devoted thing is most holy unto the Lord. So that's a different category, things that are devoted. There are vows, you see, which are based on circumstances, on time. There is a time element there. And then there are devoted things. And when you devote things, and that's in essence what the churches are asking for, that you devote, your property to the church. You did it to the church. That's in essence what they're talking about. You see, not vows. And so, they don't see any need to give it back to you. But they do not consider the entirety of the law of God and do not tell people, look, you don't have, to give it. In other words, they do not educate the people properly in the law of God to tell them, look, you can vow it to the church, for our use. And the year of Jubilee, you get it back. You see, they just say, give it to us. And they put it in your will. Well, people don't know. They don't know the law of God. They don't know the options. That's one way to keep people ignorant. Don't tell them the options. And so you just sell them whatever you want to sell them, and then they're stuck with it. That's unfortunately. That's why God says, when people are in the ministry, they should not be the kind of people who do things for filthy lucre. They should not be greedy. They should not be covetous. They should not be people who love bribes. And yet the majority of the spiritual leaders, unfortunately, quote-unquote spiritual leaders, you see, are that kind of people. And that's the way the overwhelming majority of the leaders of Israel, the spiritual leaders and the physical, the civil leaders of Israel were. Very few were sincere and honest, and very few will give you all this information and make you understand that so you can make a wise and educated decision, a good decision, you see. And we read here in verse 29, none devoted, that it may be devoted of men, shall be ransomed. He shall be surely put to death. So, if you devote an animal, an ox or things like that, or if you devote a donkey or a horse or whatever it may be, you cannot ransom it back. And that's what God is saying here. Verse 30, And all of the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or all the fruit of the tree, is the eternal's. Period. In other words, first realize that. Everything is mine. You see? But I'll let you keep 90%. And you give me 10. The 10 is mine. No ifs, yes, and buts. And what are we talking about? We're talking about a land that God gave Israel. You see? God did not apply this law to the hired servant, to the laborer. You see? Those people, those things were invented later on by men. And those things should come under different laws, different categories, in the sense that no matter what you have, in terms of salary or in terms of crops of the field that God gave you, you know, should honor God with your substance. So that should come under different categories and different teachings for it. And yet people, not knowing the law of God, they mix it all up. You see? And that's not right. That's not proper. And so some people, when they come to understand that, they say, well, now, this is applicable only to a land, and therefore, I just say, you know, have wages. I'm not supposed to give anything, because that's not applicable to that. Well, that's ignorance on the other side, too. You see, because then they forget the other laws. But God says the laborer is worthy of his hire. You see, and God says very plainly, as Paul made it very plainly, those who preach the gospel, the Lord has ordained, he said. I didn't make that up, he said. And mind you, he's not appealing to tithing. He could not. Tithing was not given to the ministry of Jesus Christ. Tithing was given to the priesthood forever. And yet, what was given to the ministry of Jesus Christ is, as he said, the Lord has ordained that those, you know, the laborer is worthy of his hire, that those who preach the gospel should live on the gospel. And then people had, obviously, a clue and an idea. What is it that they should give to the priesthood now that they, that is to the ministry, now that they are not linked to the temple? Certainly, the Gentiles were not linked to the temple, so they cannot say, well, now I'm giving to the priest. But you see, the reality at the time was the temple was still in existence, and the priesthood was still functioning, and Israel had, by law, by right of the priesthood, they had to give the tithe to the priest, not to the minister. You see? And after that, you know, when the circumstances changed, there was no temple, no priesthood, well, obviously, then things change again. And now, whatever you give to God, you get to God, you know, under the circumstances, you know, the ministry or things like that. And the reality is that, you know, when we study the law, we have to know exactly what it says and what it doesn't say, so people do not deceive us and we do not deceive ourselves and we do not make our own mind, we do not make our own laws. We just follow the law of God, which is his nature and character. And so there are different circumstances. You see, the prophets of Israel, they did not receive the tithe. They were not, you know, they were not priests. Some of them were priests. Yet people, you know, when they came to them, they gave them something. You know, they had customs. They had, you know, ways of doing things. You see, in the case of Saul, when he came to Samuel, he said, no, how can I go to him? You know, I've got nothing with me. And his servant said, well, I have half a shekel here. You know, at least you can give him something. You see? Well, that's basically what you did with the ministers of God who were not from the priesthood. You still had to give. The law was not changed. It's just the tithe was not it. And tithe was holy, dedicated, given to God because of the service that they do. And all those things have to be put together, then we can make the right decisions and know under what circumstances we give this or that or the other thing and to whom. And when people do not teach that, they just mix everything together and then you have, you know, bearing false witness in that sense and not teaching the law of God properly. And God says here, if a man will redeem aught of his tithe, he shall add. In other words, first he says, all those things are mine. You see, and mine means he gave it to the priesthood because God didn't give them a property. He gave it to all of Israel and he gave them only small properties to the Levites, but not enough to have livelihood because they were busy doing holy things, teaching the law of God. And when they went to the temple, they served there, you see. So he said, Israel, you pay for it. You know, obviously, you know, these are your teachers. You got to pay them. Otherwise, how are they going to teach you? And but if somebody wants to take back part of his tithe, which is supposed to be to God, and that's what God says is here, what do you do under the circumstances? And if a man will redeem anything of his tithe, he shall add unto it the fifth part thereof. So if he has a crop of olives and this and that, and you know he really likes to make, or he thinks, you know, I can make a real good oil out of that, and I'd rather not give it to the priest, even though that's the law, God says, okay, I'll give you an option there. You know, value, find out the value of it, add 20% to it, and you can have it. You see? You can bargain with God. That's what Abraham did and the men of God did. God is open. You know, it's a little bit of humor there in one sense, you might think. That's built into the law of God. And so, God says, verse 30, "To and all the tithe of the herd, all the flock, whatsoever passes under the rod, the tenth, shall be holy unto the Lord." So how do you tithe animals? You see, with crops, you count an omer, and then after that, another omer, another omer. In other words, another crops, the bushels, whatever it may be, and every tenth one you give to God. You see? So you pass it, in essence, you go with your stick, the rod, that's what it means, they literally did it, you see? And they counted, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the tenth goes to God. And if he had, let's say, 454 bushels, or 459 bushels, he gave a tithe of the first rounded tenths, and then when he came to the nine, you didn't give it to God from that. Why? Because he had only nine. And only the tenth, God says, I want the tenth. You see, and a lot of people do not understand that law, so they do not function based on that. And so if you had animals, they multiplied that year, and you had 347 animals, you tithed the tenth from every ten. When he came to the seven, you didn't. Until they had three more. You see? And that's a part of the law also, and yet people do not function like that. And so, let's say you earn $347 a week, or whatever it may be. Some people do it in a day or an hour. And so you count, the tenth dollar of every ten. That's what God says, in essence. From that you give. But, the $7, keep it to yourself, God gives you a little bargain there. That's the nature of God, the law of God. And yet we do not go by that. We just say, 10% of the gross, of the total. Well, God never said that of the total. That's man's invention. And yet people teach that, and they claim that's the law of God. And that's bearing false witness, and God says, I wanted to speak the truth in your heart, that when you read the law, you are not going to see it there, so why do you invent it? You say, well, how many of us are guilty of that, of doing it, especially us in the ministry? Us who are teachers, or us who teach the law, whatever it may be. We do not care about the law of God. We just read into it our own concept and ideas, and then we teach it to others. You see, and all these things are teaching material to teach you to be honest in everything. And if you cannot, as Christ said, if you cannot be faithful in the little that is given to you, how are you going to be faithful in the very much that God is going to give you? You see, we have to prove to God that we are faithful and honest with Him and with mankind in big things, in little things. And basically, based on the details that you find out whether the person is going to be faithful in the big things. You see? So there's a teaching lesson here, and we should not defile and contempt, and that is contaminate the law of God, or pervert it, or twist it, or change it, or alter it, or whatever it may be. We must be precise. Because that has to do an awful lot with our character. You see? That's important. That's why God, when He wants to make, give you options, or alternate things, or alter things, or whatever, He does it. But if He hasn't done it, as Moses said, if God is speaking through Moses, this is the law. Don't add, don't diminish. I'm not interested in your righteousness, or super righteousness, or under righteousness. In other words, I don't want you to be liberal with it, or conservative with it. Just be right. There is a liberal, and there is a conservative, and there is a righteous. And some people forget that. They just divide themselves between these two. Well, I'm liberal, or I'm conservative. Well, where is the righteous man? You see? That's why there is iniquity on both sides. But if we are all walking on the right path in the narrow road, there are no conservatives in the narrow roads, or there are no liberals in the narrow road, they are righteous people. You see? And people forget that. And so we go by the standard of the world, and a lot of people are proud and boast about it. Well, I'm liberal, and some say I'm conservative. Even within the congregation, within the church, you always see people like that. Well, I'm conservative and he's liberal. He's liberalizing the law. I'm conservative. That means I'm righteous. God says, none of you are. You're playing games. The law made it very plain. You walk on the narrow road and you stay there. You don't go to the right, you don't go to the left. You don't add to it, you don't change, you don't alter. And people who do not study the law of God day and night and are not careful about it are going to pay the penalty and are paying the penalty. That's why God, when it came to things that people might think, well, that's not a big deal, just a tiny little thing, you know, just a little alteration there on the part of the sons of Aaron. You know, they took strange fire, you know, I mean, you know, the coals went out, and, you know, we need fire, what can we do? So, you know, went outside of the tent, took it from one of the Israelites there, and put it on the altar, and God says, no way. And he zapped them. You see, in the case of Uzzah, it was the same thing. God gave the law how to carry the ark. You see, you carry it on the shoulders of the Levites. And there are poles there, and there are holes there where you put it through, and all kinds of things like that. Instead of that, David put it on a cart. He should have known better. The priest should have known better. Well, a tiny little thing, you know, a little detail, a little alteration there. And God killed him, killed Uzzah. You see? And so many things like that. God says, I am holy. Don't play games with my nature and character. I'm not interested in your nature and character, and your inventions, you see, and your law. I am holy. I'm the boss. You do what I say. Nobody gets hurt. And that's how we become like him, and he's not interested in becoming like us. And when we get it through our thick head, thick skull, then we begin to fear and tremble before God and know that our God is a consuming fire. And it is a fearful thing to fall into the hand of the Eternal. That's why Christ said, and he means it, by every word that proceeds out of your mouth, every deed, everything that we have done and thought and felt, we are going to be judged. Nothing is going to be overlooked. And that makes you fear and tremble. And you walk soberly before God all the days of your life. You see? That's what he's trying to teach us. And so, God is saying here, verse 32 again, and all the tithe of the herd of the flock, whatsoever passes under the rod, the tenth shall be holy unto the Lord. So count it, the tenth one goes to God. You don't get to number 10, you're in number 9, it's yours. You see? God is not requiring you at that point to give it to him. He's not covetous. He's not, you know, greedy. He's not there for filthy lucre. He doesn't say, well, you know, you got 7 there left. I want one of them. No, he says, no, it's yours. He's generous. People are not, unfortunately, because they are greedy and covetous by nature. And all of us are to one degree or the other, and if we do not watch it, we are very much that way. Verse 33, he shall not inquire whether it be good or bad, neither shall he change it. And if he change it at all, then both it and that for which it is changed shall be holy. So, he says, mind you, this is the law. Don't make any alterations. Don't go to the right, don't go to the left. And it shall not be redeemed, he said. Verse 34, the last verse of Leviticus, of the book of the law, the book that is the book of the Levites. These are the commandments which the Eternal commanded Moses. So it's not a Mosaic law. Yes, it's a Mosaic law because God gave it through Moses. So he called Moses lawgiver. You see, remember the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded, as it said, through Malachi. So we have to understand that. You are not reading the words of men. You see, that is, when we read the law, that's the words, you know, of God. Obviously, you know, when I speak my own words and I interpret and things like that, there you have to be careful about it and check it with the Scripture. You see, if what I am saying is it exactly what the Scripture says or is something that I'm inventing on my own, that's your responsibility to do it. I certainly do not intend, you know, in teaching all these things, you know, speak my own words. You see, and so, what comes out of the mouth of God, as Christ said, men shall live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Well, we are all accountable to it. Not accountable to my words that I've added here, there, if they're not, you know, in accordance with the law of God. If they are, well, you have to make a judgment. But you have to study it and prove it to yourself day and night, and no man should ever be interested in having other men follow them. That's a height of idolatry. That's something we should despise. We should never look up to men. In that sense, you see, we should look up to the good and the right and the righteous. You see, that's why we're told to follow those who follow, you know, the faith, you know, follow their example. And Paul makes it very plain. You follow me as I follow Christ. But if I don't, in essence he's saying, please don't follow me. And don't blame me for it. Because I'm human too, as he said. The law is holy and righteous, but I am carnal, sold under sin. Oh, wretched man that I am. So always be mindful of that. You see, so I make these statements now and then so people would realize that they should not trust in men. I don't care who that man is, including myself. And that should go for everybody else. And because we have not done that, as God says, cursed be the man that puts his trust in man. A lot of people are being cursed with all kinds of things. Many things they may not even be aware of. So God makes it very plain here. And that's a signature of God, you see, at the end of this manuscript. These are the commandments which the Lord commanded Moses for the children of Israel in Mount Sinai. And now, God gives us the choice, either to obey it or to disobey it. Not the prerogative, you see, but the choice. The prerogative is only His. He determines what the law is, not us. But we're given the choice whether to obey it or not. And so, we're done with one book here. Another book, third book. And so, we're going to continue now with the fourth one, which is the book that talks about the children of Israel and their census and the count and all that. And so, it is called the book of Numbers. In Hebrew, it's called the book of the wilderness, Sefer Bamidbar. Bamidbar, that's the name in Hebrew, in the wilderness, because that's basically what most of the book is all about. And it's also called the book of Numbers because it begins by numbering Israel. So you might say it has two names. And we begin with chapter 1 of the book of Numbers, and verse 1. And the Eternal spoke unto Moses in the wilderness of Sinai. So now that's called the book of wilderness. In the wilderness of Sinai, in the tent of meeting, on the first day of the second month, so we're talking about the month after Passover, that's Iyar. Nisan is the first one, Iyar is the second one. And by the way, many of these names of the month, the Hebrew month, are Babylonian actually, yet. Who lived in Babylon? Abraham lived in Babylon, you know, the sons of Noah lived in Babylon, so Babylon doesn't mean, you know, all evil, as some people think, you know, they go from one extreme to the other. You know, the pagans eat hot cross buns. You know, we don't eat it. Well, you can eat hot cross buns any time you want. You know, you don't care about, you know, their religion, what they think with it, what they do with it. As Paul would say, you know, idol is nothing. We know that an idol is nothing. You know, we don't care about that. You know, you're hungry, you want to eat meat, you eat meat. What, you know, what do we care what they did with it? That's their problem. You see, so that's, you know, a matter of spiritual discernment. Obviously, for beginners, in essence, God says, no, don't even do that, you see. But, you know, once you are strong in the faith, you know righteousness, you walk in the righteous, and that law is not made for the righteous. And that's why in the beginning, you know, the disciples actually forbade the Gentiles from eating meat sacrificed unto idols. But as they were growing grace, knowledge, and understanding, were established in the faith, in the law of God, and understood better that, you know, there is nothing to those idols, you know, it's just all fables. At that point, when they were stronger, Paul was able to tell them, well, don't worry even about that. He said, just eat the meat and don't worry about it and don't ask where it came from. Just make sure that it is clean food, obviously, and not unclean. And that was not an issue because they offered generally only clean food to the gods, you know, that they believed in. And so we read here this, in the wilderness of Sinai, in the tent of meeting, on the first day of the second month, in the second year after they were come out of the land of Egypt. So it's a year and a month, saying, take you the sum of the congregation of the children of Israel by their families, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of the names, every male by their polls, from 20 years old and upward. And that's what the count was all about, from 20 years and upward, not under, not above. So whatever number you're going to end up with here, people have to realize, this is just the number of the people from 20 and upward. Those are called the men of war, the men of service. You see, from 20 years you began your training in the priesthood, if you were a priest or a Levite, and 30 you were ordained to the official office of the priest to serve, you know, to offer the sacrifices. And so the service generally began at 20, and 10 years you have sort of period of training, and in 30 you're really entering officially a public office, and, you know, unless you're a king, that's a different story. And unless God chose you, that's another different story, you know, like the prophets, some of them were youth, very young, not even 20, like Jeremiah, Samuel from birth, he was ordained to that, or John, or Christ, or, you know, things like that. But generally speaking, that was the age of where, you know, you were taken to the service, you see, and inducted into office. For a period of training, and then at 30, you officially fulfill it. And that's what he's saying here in terms of counting the people. And so you count them that way, from 20 years of old and upward, all that are able to go forth to war in Israel. So that was a specific, you know, instruction. Men of war, in other words. If you are able to go to war, That's the time you go. 20. What do they do in this country? People that supposedly, you know, they have on their dollar bill, you know, in God we trust. And the fathers of the Constitution say that, well, you know, the Bible is our guide. Without it, you cannot really govern and things like that. And give, you know, and obviously we're sincere, but not too knowledgeable of the law of God, you see. And so you have a part of the law today. You know, when you're 18, you go to the army, you see, and you die before you get to age 18. You know, there is war. A lot of people, a lot of Americans died before they were 20. Oh, you couldn't vote because you're 21, or you couldn't drink, or, you know, this and that, or the other thing. But it's okay to die. It's okay to go to the army. It's okay to go to war. You see, that's perverted law that you have of people who just pay less, you know, lip service to God, and they call themselves a Christian nation. And God says 20. Before 20, you know, stick around. But until then, you know, you're not allowed to induct anybody like that into the service. God made it very plain. You go to war only after age 20, not before that. So you can see, you know, that people paid the penalty for that, for disobeying this law of God, whether they know it or not. It's neither here nor there. They claim to be the people of God. They should know that. You know, they're the people who have this Bible in their hand from Genesis to Revelation. They believe that the whole thing is a Bible, and yet they despise that law of God. Thanks to the priesthood that they had, or the ministry. Verse 4, verse 3, from 20 years of old and upward that are able to go forth to war in Israel, you shall number them by their hosts, that is by their armies in Hebrew, even you and Aaron. So the census is to be done by the leaders of Israel in terms of the priesthood and Moses. You see? And generally speaking, it was the priest's responsibility to do it, not the census bureau. You see, God to begin with forbade Israel from counting how many people are in Israel in totality. Now, what does this nation do every, you know, 10 years? Census. They count. God said, don't do it. Well, you know what happened when David did it? And David was, in essence, inspired to do it both by God and the devil in order to punish Israel. That was the intent there. That's why I have to read the two accounts there to complete the picture. In one place, you read, you know, the devil, Satan, you know, incited him to do it. Another place, you read that God was angry with Israel to punish them, and so he caused David. Well, how did he cause David? Well, he allowed the devil to go and inspire him to do it. And for selfish reason, David did it. Well, I wanted to know how powerful he is. You see, and God says, don't ever do that. Don't ever count everybody in Israel. And when you do, you have to do it in a holy manner, and the priest must be involved in it, and everybody must pay half a shekel. And that's how you count. You don't count the people. You just tell everybody, as you come to the sanctuary, you put a certain amount of money there, and then we're going to count the money, not people. Count the money. You see? That's how you do it. Well, these are the laws of God, and people have a choice of either obeying them or not, but not the prerogative to change them, you see, or to make them. Verse 4, and with you there shall be a man of every tribe, everyone head of his father's house. These are the people who are going to be a part of the census bureau. And these are the names of the men that shall stand with you. Of Reuben, you know, the firstborn. And the firstborn is always Reuben, even though Joseph, you know, took that part in terms of the birthright, but not in terms of the family. The firstborn remains the firstborn. And so of Reuben, now we're going to read a lot of names, and obviously it's going to be, it's going to sound boring to a lot of people, but mind you, God wrote it, He sat down, He dictated that, and just think, you know, just pretend that you're there sitting, taking dictation from God, and at what point are you going to begin to yawn, and to say, oh, how boring it is, or forget all about it? That was a part of the law that was commanded to be read in the synagogue, and Jesus said through it every single year, year after year after year, going through that. I didn't start, you know, yawning at that point and say, oh, I wish I was somewhere else, you know. Well, let's go to more juicy a part, you know, of the law. Spiritual things, you see. That's our attitude, many of us. You see, to our own shame. And we don't even think about it. And so when we read it, let's understand it. No matter how boring it sounds. And yes, there are always aspects of life, you know, that are not as interesting as others. But they are necessary. They have a purpose. And when you go very deeply into it, after all, these are human beings. They want to need to know who they are. And it is recorded for posterity. You see, one of these days they're going to meet them in person. And all, everything will become totally different at that point. So I have to think about it from that point of view. And so we read first of Reuben, Eliezer, the son of Shedeur of Shimon, Simeon, Shlumiel, the son of Tzuri Shaddai. I'll read in Hebrew, it's easier. English really butchered, you know. English, by, as a matter of fact, the translation, unfortunately, by Brother Ephraim, basically butchered every single name almost in the Bible, be it of a city or of a person, which is very unfortunate. Because they are altering totally the meaning by doing that. You see? Reuven, that means see a son. Reuben, you know, doesn't mean that, but Reu, Ben, that means see a son, that's his name. Elisur, the son of Deur, of Shimon, so I have a little bit of Hebrew here. Shimon, Shlumiel, the son of Tzuri Shaddai, of Yehuda, Judah in English. Nachshon, the son of Aminadav, of Issachar. Netanel, the son of Azur, just follow that and you know what I'm talking about, you know. In other words, I'll speak in tongues and translate and interpret, that's the law again. And so you can read it also in English with me. Verse 9, of Zvulun, of Zebulun, Eliab, the son of Hevlon, of the children of Joseph, of Ephraim, or Ephraim, Elishama, the son of Amihud, of Manasseh, of Menashe, Gamliel, you know, read about, you know, Rabbi Gamaliel, here it is, the first one mentioned in the Bible. Gamaliel, the son of Pedahzur, and in other words, Gamaliel means Gam. You can put it in different ways. Gam means also, Li means to me, and El, God. In other words, God is also to me, or the Gmul of God. Gmul of God means the reward of God. So it can go both ways. In other words, names have meanings, and if you change and alter that, you know, in two different languages, you totally miss that, and you miss an awful lot in the process. And that's what people have done with the, not only with names, but the entirety of the law of God, unfortunately. So, of Manasseh and Gamaliel, when people think about Gamaliel, think about a Jew, you know, Gamaliel, and they don't realize that was the name of a Manasseh, an American, in modern terms. The son of Pedahzur, or son of Joseph, some people think America is somebody else. Verse 11, of Benjamin, son of my righteousness, Abidan, the son of Gideon, of Dan, Ahiezer, the son of Amishaddai, and of course, present-day descendants of these people would never recognize these names yet. These are the people that are their ancestors. One of these days are going to meet them. They are real, live, breathing people. They're going to be, that is, when they're resurrected. You know, they're not going to make fun of them. They're not going to alter their names and, you know, call them by different things that they don't really mean what it says. You see, they're going to have to learn their names and address them properly. You know, that's poor etiquette if you do not call somebody by what his name is. You know, if your name is James or John, or, you know, you don't want to be called by a different name just because in another language you call you differently. You would not even recognize your name there. Of Dan, Ahiezer, the son of Amishaddai, of Asher, Pagiel, the son of Ochran, of Gad. Well, I'm not going to take time now explaining all the meanings of the names. There's a lot of information there, obviously, but, you know, we cannot be so detailed or we'll never get anywhere. Verse 14, of Gad, Eliasaph, the son of Deuel, of Naphtali, or Naphtali, Ahira, the son of Enan. These are the elect of the congregation, the princes of the tribes of their fathers. So these are the chief people. Everybody knew them. Famous people. And they were to be a part of the census. They were the heads of the thousands of Israel. And Moses and Aaron took these men that are pointed out by name. So you cannot choose just anybody. No self-appointment there. And they assembled all the congregation together on the first day of the second month. And they declared their pedigrees after their families, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of their names. Because, see, all these things are very important, all these details, because later on you are going to go into the land of Canaan, it's going to be divided by the tribes, and then, according to that genealogy and those names, your land will be recognized as yours. You see, and you will be recognized. You just drop a name and everybody knows who that name is. And that's why in the Middle East, and I grew up in a society like that, they don't ask you what your name is, they ask you what's the name of your father. Well, your father has been around for a long time, has reputation, credibility, and all that. They know him, they don't know you. You see? So, you better be careful about upholding the name of the family, because it becomes very important. Today, what's the last name? No, you know, it doesn't mean anything. And life is so different because of that. When we stray away from God, everything changes. And when we come back to God, everything is going to change again. Things would become right side up instead of upside down. And these are these people. They assembled all the people, you know, by their pedigrees and names and family names and things like that. And all those things were recorded. Especially with the priesthood, they had to know exactly, you see, your pedigree genealogy, or else he could not be in the priesthood. And that's what happened when they came back from captivity in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah. If your name was not there in the pedigree, you know, well, they didn't know whether you're a priest or not. And that was the question. And so they waited until the high priest was able to contact God and really know such and such, is he of the priesthood or not. So you see, those things become very important when you realize all these details that are important. And so all these people, according to their number of the names, from 20 years of old and upward by their polls, as the Eternal commanded Moses. So we were just reading the commandments of God. And what commandments of God, you know, we're going to start yawning at and think it's boring and forget all about it. You know, people call it the boring part of the law. Is there something about God that you consider to be boring? You see, well, some people do. When you have no appreciation, no understanding, you know, anything can be boring to you. Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're going to continue next time. Until then, greetings to all of God's people.